Welcome back to the programme. Thanks for all of your comments coming in so far this morning. Greatly appreciate each and every one of them. A caller says, the Back Road school area is a disaster. This is in and around Letterkenny, so if you know, you know. No drop-off for St Union's at all. Pedestrian crossings at Tintye and Kernans blocks roads coming from New Mills when someone crosses in a car turn to go up the back road. How come not one of these councillors use bikes or walk? Well, we don't know who does and doesn't, but I take your point. Hi, Greg. I had Friday off work, but had to go to Letterkenny to get my phone fixed. Try to stay out of it with the traffic, but had to go, and it was a nightmare. I turned around and said to the wife, not be back here again till well after Christmas. We have Letterkenny destroyed. The one thing I will say, and it's very important in relation to this, because I can only speak from my own experience, there's certain times of the day in any large town there's going to be traffic. There's never going to be a scenario, no matter what anyone ever does, is whereby going into Letterkenny is going to be like going into Mount Charles. It's just simply not the case. It's about scale. A lot of the time, I can get in there, no bother at all, get parking, get my stuff, and away again. There are times, though, pinch points, whereby there are issues. There's no doubt about that. And sometimes it can be a little bit random. But in and around Letterkenny, once you're in, personally, I find you can move freely. And the businesses, you know, do an awful lot to support the county through their rates, but also, you know, people through employment and what have you. So maybe look at timing or whatever it might be, but I wouldn't be completely discouraged. There's an incident on the Cullion Road in Letterkenny and the road is blocked. Has that been cleared? I think I heard someone reference. Shannon, did you get a call in relation to the Cullion Road? No, can you hear me? She can't. Everyone's on phones. Right, now, on the issue of Ain't Do. Morning, Greg. Ain't Do at 10% in Ulster Connacht, a few points behind the two government parties on the back of Ain't Do's highest poll. Ain't Do leader Padraig Tobin will visit Donegal this weekend and will be joined by Deputy Leader Gemma Brawley at a meet and greet event in Buncrana on Sunday at Coghill 8pm. On rates again, Kieran has the gift of being on everyone's side. Don't see them walking or cycling very far. As a small business owner, I'm very concerned about what the new year brings. The traffic is bad and is putting people off. What I'm getting for paying all these rates, or what am I getting? I have spoken to business owners who say they've been threatened with the bailiffs for non-payments of rates. Good morning, Greg. A lot of us are wondering why there's no activity seen at the Market Square this year. Right, so normally like a crib or something along those lines. I'm not awfully familiar with it. But is there normally one there, and why isn't the one there this year? Who's responsible for putting it up, I wonder? I don't know. I simply don't know. Any information in relation to that would be useful. A caller says, the whole lot of them were asleep at the wheel for years. The Bonnaghy Bridge was needed 20 years ago. Now it needs to be out about the Silver Tassie and a bridge similar to the Foyle Bridge built. It was built 40 years ago, by the way. There's more cycle lanes than enough about town, and I see a handful of people using them. Most of the traffic is coming from out of town, and people from out of town are not going to be cycling or on scooters. Wise up, cycle lanes don't suit every town. I think maybe I'm wrong, but I think the example of Carrick-on-Shannon was given, and my recollection of Carrick-on-Shannon, and it's very fresh when I'm there or when I arrive, but can get less fresh the longer I'm there, is that it's flat. I do recall walking around it, and it is flat as a billiard table. My recollection is, as I say, I'm open to correction in relation to that. Letterkenny not so. Letterkenny's been built on a hill. Right, keep your calls, comments coming in, 086 60 25,000. Just one more mention, not the last mention, but I just want to really make sure no one misses out. We are closing the lines, 11 or so, for our draw. We've got 10 draws of €1,000, and we've got 10 calls of €1,000. One second here. What's that? Someone's just... scam caller. Sorry, I thought it was a scam caller. It was a scam caller, but I have to add them on WhatsApp. My God, they're not making it too easy for themselves, are they? I just thought I could get a scam caller on the radio there once they'd rang me. What was I saying? Yeah, the card draw. Lines will close in about an hour, I would say. We've got €1,000 to give away between 11 and 12. That'll really get your Christmas going. And €1,000 every day this week on various shows, and then every day next week on various shows. And then we've got a car a beautiful Renault Symbios to give away, €35,000 plus. If you want to be in all 11 draws and just chill out for the rest of December, get in touch with us now, 07491 25000, or you could go onto our website, which really is the handiest for you, and I'm not going to lie, potentially handier for us, and that is highlandradio.com. It's all very safe and all very secure. David James actually is coming in to do the draw, and it's live, and you can watch it as well at around about 11:30. So if you don't ordinarily watch the programme, feel free to tune in on our YouTube channel or our Facebook channel, and you can see the draw taking place live. And just to remind you, by the way, because there's a lot, you know, there's a few competitions going on, you don't have to answer a phone call, just to be very clear on that. So if you're at work or you're going to be driving, or your signal's crap at home, you don't have to answer a telephone call. Whoever's number comes out, they win. And that's the €1,000 or the cars, by the way. So if you work in retail and the boss says you can't have your phone out, don't worry about that. You'll win one way or other, but you have to be in to win. Back after these. Good luck, by the way, if you are playing the bingo today. So we do invite you to contact us, and we do then endeavour to get any responses where we can. And you might remember towards the end of last week, we got a contact from a listener that read, "My husband gets a blister tablet for all his tablets. From the 1st of January 2026, he'll have to pay €20 for the blister pack. The HSC said they will not be paying the subsidy for it. He takes 18 tablets in the morning. How am I supposed to sort his tablets out at my age? My husband already pays €25 a month levy." Tom Murray is the president of the Irish Pharmaceutical Union, and he joins me now. Tom, thanks for your time. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. What's a blister pack, Tom? Because, you know, some people will be very familiar with it and some will have never come across it before.
Okay, so a blister pack is a what we would call a monitored dosage system. It's a compliance aid where there will be a number of days of the week and a number of times per day, and the tablets are separated through it to help people manage multiple medicines. And that is different to what was being provided before. And what's happened is two different services have become conflated or mixed over the period of time. So what the state has never ever paid for blister packing. What the state has paid for was phase dispensing, where a patient, due to patient safety issues, would require multiple supplies, often weekly, to help manage their medicines. A lot of pharmacists were then actually adding in the blister pack as a second compliance aid to help with those patients, but it was never ever funded by the state. But some patients believed it was, because they were receiving a tray whilst they were getting their phase supply. What the state have done now is they've looked at it with the pharmacoeconomics profiles, and they've also looked at the patient safety issues around phasing. And rather than having that the patient is eligible for phasing, we've identified the medicines that are most at risk for patients. And as a patient care and patient-centered approach, they're actually going to phase only the medicines that are at risk for those patients. Patients will still be able to get the blister packs, but blister packing has always been a private service, and many pharmacists or many patients have been paying for blister packs for years. So it's not actually clear to say the state no longer subsidised it, because the state never did pay for those. That was an extra service pharmacists provided to people who were getting phase dispensings. Mm. Phasings will still be available for people with psychotropic medicines, opiate medicines, the like of pregabalin or Lyrica. But for patients who may or may not need the monitored dosage system, if they choose to continue to use it, it is a private service and it has always been. And to be honest with you, there is very, very little evidence to support the use of compliance aids like monitored dosage systems in managing medicines, which is why, from the state's point of view, there's no investment or return investment for patient care for them.
So suffice to say, some of this, what we're talking about, is a convenience for the person. Because yes, someone else is doing the sorting.
Absolutely. Some of it is a convenience to help. And that is still available. And any patient who's worried about that should talk to their local pharmacist to have talked about different ways of managing compliance. And there are more than just these blister packs that are available. They're not the most effective way to manage multiple medicines, but some patients like them. Talk to your local pharmacist about that. And the pharmacist will go through a range of options with you about how to manage your medicines. Often the blister packs cause as many problems as they solve. Because if you have a patient, if I give you your medicines and every one of them is a box with the name of the medicine on it, you can tell me what medicines you're on. If I hand you out a tray with a load of little white tablets and yellow tablets in it, very often we get patients who no longer know what tablets they're on. If they drop one out of the blister, they don't know which one they've dropped. So the blister packs aren't perfect. They are a help, but they're not perfect.
I've seen people open up like a tray with squares in it, plastic. It's almost like something you store fishing tackle in. And they place the tablets in that themselves, and there's days on that. Yep. What's the difference between that and a blister pack?
None whatsoever, except in the blister pack, the pharmacist is doing it for you.
Okay, right. I guess.
And many, many patients prefer to do it themselves at home. Some patients prefer to have their pharmacist do it for them. It depends on the patient and how comfortable they are doing it. And again, they should talk to their local pharmacist about what's best for them and how to do it. They're extremely labour intensive in pharmacies, and that is why, unfortunately, there has always been a charge for those things. But where people were getting phase dispensing, where the state was paying for the patient to come in multiple times a month to the pharmacy, the pharmacist was then supplementing that by providing a blister. The state are now will continue to pay for phasing for certain medicines, but not for every medicine for every patient, because the cost was getting way too high for the state and it wasn't actually producing any patient safety advances. Whereas the new phasing guidelines, where we've identified the tablets that are of danger to the patients, will provide that. I am aware, just to respond to obviously the lady who texted into your own show, there are many, many patients who are vulnerable patients and who rely on the MDS, and we are working with the state on those. There is to be a medicines optimization budget to come into play next year. And we have talked to all the patient advocacy groups. We've met 10 of them so far who've asked for their advice and what they want us to do. All of which, by the way, told us they think every pharmacy should be charging for this, which was an interesting thing to hear from advocacy groups. But we are trying to work with the state on the medicines optimization bill to try and identify those vulnerable patients and provide some form of care package for those, but it just hasn't been finalized.
I presume
with the state yet.
This sounds like a transition, right? That to be handled as best as possible. There is an accepted sort of normalized service there for people who are, but people who might be starting a course of medicine, they would never have known that. You know what I mean? They can't miss what they didn't know, right? So this is really about transitioning those currently familiar with this system to what will become the norm then?
And maybe some of the people who've become used to this system have become dependent on something they don't necessarily need. Some of them do need it, some of them don't. Some of our patients buy these, as you call them, the weekly pill packs that look like a fishing tackle box, and they fill their medicines themselves. They prefer to do that. Some patients prefer to have their pharmacist do it for them, and that's a conversation they have to have with their individual pharmacist and in their local pharmacy to see what the costs involved in that will be and how that service is provided.
And presumably there's some latitude amongst the pharmacists as well. I don't know. I don't want to make any commitments, but
I can't talk about individual pharmacists' costs or individual pharmacies. Yeah. I know that I have patients who have been paying for that service for over 5 years in my three pharmacies, and they very happily pay for it. And they have all, I've talked to them all individually, or the pharmacist in the pharmacies has. And there are other patients who say, no, I'd rather do it myself. And again, it's a conversation that you have. I can't set a price or tell you what people, because there's different cost bases in every pharmacy.
Right. So just to be clear, right back to the beginning then, and it is a complex one, but I just want to break it down one more time, because there's a difference. Obviously, there's medicines that are handed out in certain numbers. There's not a necessary a as great a risk of taking the wrong medicine or too much medicine. So there are your medicines that are given out in greater numbers versus those where a patient has to come in on a more regular basis. So just break it down there. What is going to continue and what is going to change?
So for many, many patients, there'll be no changes. For certain patients, they will continue to get their medicines phased if they're taking, as I say, psychotropic medicines or medicines that pose a danger to them if they're taken incorrectly. For other patients who take the MDS systems who have been, or the blister packs who have been receiving them as an additional service from their pharmacy free of charge, they need to talk to their local pharmacies to see, are they going to continue to provide the service, and will there or won't there be a charge, which will be an individual conversation with every pharmacy and every patient. I expect that there probably will be a charge for them all, because that's what the patient's advocacy groups are telling us. And there is a, it's a very labour intensive service, and there is a cost to providing it. but the medicines that are identified as risk medicines for the patients, those medicines may continue to be supplied on a weekly basis. And patients, without being specific about what anyone's on the radio, people need to talk to the local pharmacist to see what is, what medicines am I on that are dangerous or that I'm at risk on, and do I need to have them dispensed multiple times a month, weekly, or can I take 1 month supply at a time, and do I need one of these blister packs or not? And that's just a conversation people have to have privately with each of
their pharmacists. I think that's a really important point you make too about potentially forgetting which medicine is which and kind of an over-reliance there. Because they can all look the same, really. And if some of these, one is you know, one of the stronger ones or one where there's a greater risk with taking the wrong dose of it, you know, you can get sort of into a false sense of security there.
You absolutely do, and monitored dosage systems do, I suppose the posh word for it is disempower patients, but really what it does is patients become less familiar with the names of the medicines they're on. They just know they take 6 white tablets in the morning and 3 yellow tablets in the afternoon and whatever in the evening, but they can't tell you what they are, whereas when they have the list of the boxes at home, patients tend to be more knowledgeable about what they're actually on. And there is an element of over-reliance on compliance things, which are convenience aids, and people become less aware of what they're actually taking.
Yeah, I'm thrusting this on you a little bit so you can bat it away if you wish, Tom, but we've learned that the government's cost-benefit analysis meant that we didn't go for the boosted flu jab. Now we're using the one that's not boosted because the numbers didn't add up, and we're seeing effectively enough flu patients attending hospitals to fill 2 acute hospitals. Any view in relation to that as someone who administers it?
Well, the only thing I can say that I can't comment on the cost base because I wasn't part of the pharmacoeconomic analysis, but I will say you're absolutely correct. The volume of flu that we're seeing on a daily basis now is rising hugely. I saw a report yesterday from the IMO saying they need about 1,000 beds nationally for flu alone. And I saw a report in the north of Ireland, I think it was saying that the number of flu cases had risen 50% in 2 weeks. I am seeing anecdotally a massive rise in the number of children with flu symptoms. So the only thing I'd say is whatever vaccines are available, they are highly effective and safe. And I would encourage people to make sure they get the vaccine. I can't comment on the pharmacoeconomic principles of the state, unfortunately.
All right. Listen, thank you very much indeed for that. And effectively, what the situation was is decisions are made at some point, and a decision was made not to give this enhanced flu jab to over 65. So the health service executive did not offer, as I mentioned, a enhanced influenza vaccine for people over 65. They're just given the standard vaccine instead. So it's called an adjuvanted vaccine. It includes an ingredient called an adjuvant that increases the immune response compared with the standard vaccine. So a HICWA report last year estimated that switching to adjuvanted vaccine for people over 65 years and older rather than the standard flu vaccine may be the best use of resources, but they did a value option. The best value option, they said, would depend on the price the HSE would need to pay for each type of vaccine, and these prices are confidential. But in the course of all of this, it was decided that there wasn't the cost benefit to have this enhanced flu vaccine, so we're just getting the standard one. So far, 9 deaths attributed to flu have been recorded, 4 of those under 65. And it's like back in the day with COVID, you're not dying necessarily, God rest them, but you're not dying necessarily from flu. You're dying from often comorbidity that's aggravated, co-issues that are aggravated by it. Okay, we have a listener here. Just the hello, Caroline. What's this lady's name? The caller? It's okay, just a comment. Okay. A caller says, I'm blind and it's very hard for me to give up my blister pack. I just found out about this on Friday. Now it will cost me extra money that I didn't have. €20 for one, and I get 4 in a month. Now, have you spoken to your pharmacist, listener, just to be on the safe side? Because you heard the advice from Tom there, and I'm not sure, you know, obviously yours is a very specific situation, and you know, there's not a I'm not sure if there's a blanket charge across everyone's circumstance. So if you have, maybe you can get back in touch with us. Did you contact your pharmacist, and is this the price that they gave you? Just so I have a better understanding of that going forward. 0860 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, 0860 60 25000, or give us a call on 0749125000. It is the 9 till noon show. Right, let me see. We are joined on the programme now by Declan Power, who's a defence analyst. Good morning, Declan.
Good morning. How are you?
I am good. Thank you so much for joining us. Right. Now, the state's being urged to treat last Monday's drone sighting as a wake-up call. Now, for those who may have missed this, because it kind of broke late in the day, Declan, what exactly did we witness?
What happened was drones, I think up to four in number, were swarming around the naval vessel, the Ellie William Butler Yeats. And that was an occurrence not long after President Zelensky's aircraft had landed in Dublin Airport. So these drones had incurred into a no-fly zone area. And as such, the naval service would have been within their rights to have engaged with the drones and shot them down. But at that stage, they were no longer a direct threat to President Zelensky. And it was unclear as to what exactly they were doing. And I suppose, rather sensibly, the captain of the Ellie, William Butler Yeats, gave no orders to shoot them down, but to observe. And if they had become a threat to the ship's company or the ship, I'm sure he probably would have taken the necessary action. However, since this has pointed out that there are significant inadequacies in Ireland's national security architecture with regards to protecting our needs, our interests and our people in light of what can be described as a form of hybrid warfare. And hybrid warfare refers to hostile incidents that do not meet the typical definition of an act of war. They're not a direct attack, but they stop short of that. And it's uncertain as to what their intent is. So it's been problematic, not just for us, but for our partners and allies in Europe.
Was it rather,
as people would have seen.
Yeah, was it rather fortuitous that these were no longer seen as a threat and didn't have to be engaged? I mean, is it very clear? Would it be the LE that would take these things down? Do they have the capability to do so? Would it be some other arm of national security? Like, I'm just wondering if they were designed and actually were to take out Zelensky, for an example, or to interfere with the flight of his plane, do we have a plan of action? Do we have the wherewithal to negate these threats?
Well, we do, but it's not... They're not. We don't have the range of options that we should have. You know, we should be able to have a range that we don't have to go from 0 to 60 into deliberate belligerent action. And in a situation like this, it shows you how limited our state is with regards to these kinds of things. The naval vessels had various weapon systems, including 20mm cannon, that they could have used line of sight to shoot those drones down. But if we had electronic countermeasures, it's a more effective and safer method that interferes with the signal of the drone and the operator. And these have been, systems like that are in use with Dublin Airport to prevent drones incurring into its area of responsibility and interfering with safe operation of aircraft. And in addition, though, I would argue that if we just focus on drones alone, that's not the answer to the problem. If a rogue state like Russia wanted to interfere with the safe operation of aircraft or conduct of the European presidency summits, if they were to launch drone attacks or drone swarming at a time of a cyber attack, along with the campaign of disinformation online, that could be significantly difficult for our state to contain against.
Yeah, and chuck in the cutting of a data cable there, for instance, as well, if you wanted to.
Well, indeed, but what I've described are all very low-level, easy-to-operate matters. You would throw in the cutting of a either a data cable or an undersea interconnector. And then you're talking about some severe hardship for this country. I could just take an interconnector. 80% of our energy needs come through one of the interconnectors from down from Scotland. If that's severed, that would take approximately 6 months probably to repair. And we will be looking at rolling power cuts in this country and extreme hardship for people, as we saw during Stormy Owen.
Yeah, and I presume, Declan, you know, there are Russian vessels and either on top of the water or on the water. They know where everything is and who's reliant on what and what impact it might have. You know, we'd be naive to think otherwise. They would, I presume, already have formulated some sort of a plan if they wanted to go down that route.
Yes, you're quite right. I mean, it's widely accepted within the Western intelligence community that the Russians have mapped out the locations of cables and interconnectors, not just in the Irish Sea and between Ireland and Britain, but elsewhere around Western Europe and particularly in the Nordic states. However, on the positive side, it's more difficult than one would think to engage in an actionable and positive outcome of sabotage against those kinds of things without drawing attention to yourself. Mm. However, the question is, and part of the reason that the Russians have been doing what they've been doing, it's not just the simple, you know, World War II is in the past. You know, modern warfare is starting to present as something that is a mixture of what, traditional kinetic operations and things that make it difficult for a country to react for political reasons or for geopolitical or legal reasons. So in the Irish case, they're rubbing a raw spot as to what are the jurisdictional responsibilities, what are the political restraints. So a country like Ireland, a country like Britain, we have very different postures when it comes to defence and security, different viewpoints. But we do, this is a key, I would argue, this is where the rubber meets the road. Ireland, more so than any other European Union or European country, has to start to live in the world we're in rather than the world they might like to think we live in. Mm. We don't have the luxury of thinking that we can stay separate from the realities of what's happening. Even if we wanted to, even those people who say things like neutrality is our best form of defence, and that it served us well in the past, I disagree on both
accounts. Well, you can't adopt in a policy where you're politically clearly not neutral, and even to the point, actually, we are effectively becoming one of the key anti-Russian stroke European cheerleaders, and we're only going to see more of that with the presidency next year. So, you know, you can't have it both ways. You can't sort of try and be the face of something and then not even know how you might deal with drones, because that's naive. But it doesn't mean we have to join a European army either. I presume there's some balance can be struck there. Declan?
Absolutely. And nobody's looking for us to join
I'm speaking to those that might think that we're trying to, you know yourself, there'll be people listening
I think
this conversation is about laying the groundwork for that.
I just finish on one point that's both hopeful and practical? We can learn lessons from our near neighbours, the Nordics, for example. Long before Sweden and Finland joined NATO, they had an arrangement called the Nordic Defence Cooperation System. And the Swedes, the Finns, the Danes and the Norwegians, some of whom were in NATO, some of whom weren't, some of whom were in the EU, some weren't, they all were able to come together in a system of cooperation and share defence assets and combine towards national security needs. We could easily do the same thing. We could arrange a bilateral or a multilateral system, including the Nordics and the French, under the banner of the European Union, because Britain has now signed a defence and security memorandum of understanding with the European Union, for us to enhance our security and defence process and to normalise it and to work with neighbours where they can plug gaps that we technologically can't. Mm. And we can contribute to that system as well, particularly when we get the radar system in place. We'll have intelligence that we'll be able to contribute to. And that acts as a deterrent. Yeah. And it's purely defensive, and it doesn't require us to get involved in foreign overseas adventures or wars elsewhere.
Declan, one very final question. Where are these drones likely to have taken off from and landed? We don't have that information. Maybe this new radar system might allow that, but where are they likely to have lifted off and landed?
I think it's highly likely that they were dispersed from a vessel in the Irish Sea, and that they were assisted with onshore visual observation assistance. So it would be much more difficult to keep something like that a secret if it was being launched from within Ireland. The investigation being launched by both Garda National Intelligence and the Irish Military Intelligence Service will probably get to the bottom of that, because they will have assistance from the UK and from within the European Union on that. And there were a number of vessels that were acting in a suspicious way in the Irish Sea that are connected, considered to be connected to the Russian shadow fleet. It's following the pattern of what happened with the Danes, with the Poles, and with other parts of Europe with regards to drone swarming. Right. And I think collectively the answer will come from within a pan-European technological and operational response to that, which we need to be part of.
Declan, thanks for all your time. Look after yourself. Declan Power there, who is a defence analyst. Again, that's another story that kind of emerged towards the weekend, and I didn't really get a chance to talk about it. And there you are. That is that. Right, very shortly, we're going to be crossing to the border as An Garda Síochána and the PSNI launch their Christmas and New Year road safety campaign. We'll have audio from that, of course. Donna Marie Doherty, our journalist, is there. We'll be hooking up with her to see what's going on, and she'll be back with some interviews as well a little later on today. A caller says, "Wow, it sounds almost like we're an absolute joke of a country," says a listener. "That's completely unable to defend itself, while its population continues to whine about any attempt at building our defences up and so-called neutrality." Again, there's, we can do different stuff. We don't have to go all in. Morning, Greg. "The sighting of drones is good news for this government to push for getting rid of our triple lock, and God knows what will follow after that. Thank you." Again, that's why I think it's important to have these conversations, because, you know, maybe that's, if you're opposed to the triple lock, you're in favour of the triple lock, maybe these are the types of things that would be used as a strong argument to get rid of it. And it's important we have the conversation now and we understand it, so that you, if it ever comes to having to make a decision on it, can do so. You've just heard from a defence analyst there saying we can do stuff. Doesn't mean we have to join a European army or what have you, but we can do stuff to protect our skies, etc. So there is a grey area. It's not always black and white. Our journalist Donna Marie Doherty is on the border in Bridgend, or at Bridgend. Donna Marie, good morning to you.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, yes, it's fine. Come here. This is an event we see every year and at different times through the year. What's exactly happening here?
So today the PSNI and An Garda Síochána have come together to put out their appeal that they want to make sure that everybody has each member of their family around the table at Christmas. So it's their annual Christmas road safety appeal. They're already a weekend, and they're essentially saying, you know, make sure that you have your family around you. In Ireland alone this year, there's been 168 road deaths, and 10 of those have been in our own county here in Donegal. So that figure of 10 there is from the 30th of November from the RSA. So really, it's a case of let's keep it at that. It's 10 too much already.
Yeah, and it's a high-profile one, isn't it? Because we're looking over your shoulder there. There's lots of traffic, the Gardaí, the PSNI there, and it's clear that they're using this, you know, high-vis opportunity to try and get that strong message out there. And presumably both forces with specific enforcement operations over the festive period.
Yeah, so you can see here, their checkpoint here, and then just at the other side of the camera here, the PSNI are just directly on the other side of the border, and I suppose that's the sort of a visual message. They said that there is going to be more checkpoints, but even if you feel as though you're not seeing it, they're saying that they have a lot of unmarked cars out as well, so we can be rest assured that that is out there. What they're saying is, specifically, the PSNI have their Fatal Five, and Garda Síochána have their Fatal Four. The big one is drinking under the influence of either drugs and being on your phone. They're saying that those are the two that they're really, really stressful, and speed, obviously, as well. And what they're asking people is don't do it yourself. But if you know someone in your life who has a tendency, they'll have one and they'll be like, it's all right, I'll just drive home. It's only a 10-minute drive. don't show up for them after the fact, show up for them now whenever they're still here.
Yeah, it's a strong message too. And we talk an awful lot about those headline figures, 168 people having very sadly lost their lives, but many, many more suffering, you know, serious injury, life-changing injuries, you know, a blow to the head that can change someone's ability to remember or their personality or what have you. So whatever we can do to try and eliminate road traffic collisions, I suppose we just have to take this collective responsibility, Donna Marie.
Exactly, exactly. I always think about whenever they say serious but not life-threatening. Yes, you can live without your arm or your leg, but it's going to be a lot more difficult to do so. They also have stressed the importance of the element of this. So, you know, they want to totally mitigate that idea of you're getting chased on one side of the border that you can cross over and you'll scot-free. They're saying that they work together every day, but just coming up now, especially to this festive period, to really to hone that home. And Superintendent Kelly again was saying, you know, that whenever there is a road tragedy, communities come together as they should, and you often see guards of honour of clubs and societies. But to make that effort, especially now, to stress, you will have a Christmas party and everything coming up. Don't show up afterwards, and that will really welcome message home. And they don't want to come knocking on anyone's door in the mouth of Christmas to say that, you know, you've lost your loved one or that your loved one's in hospital in a really critical condition.
Yeah, and I've spoken to too many guards and too many families. One group knocking that door and the others opening it. It's exactly what happens. It's exactly what happens.
Oh, exactly.
It's exactly. Not just and an advert. Go ahead.
No. We had the chief inspector, the head of the road safety operations there, Celeste Simpson, and she was saying that during this campaign last year, they made specific protections. They made 5,000 checkpoints for sobriety tests, and that we failed us for the start of the year.
Yeah.
And okay. This year as well, they've had 50 fatalities on the roads in Northern Ireland, which, you know, for six counties is quite a large number.
Okay, Donna Marie, listen, thank you very much for that. We'll hear the interviews with the Gardaí and the PSNI later on the news bulletins. Thank you. Look after yourself. That's our journalist, Donna Marie Doherty, there. And I'm sure we'll have a pre-Christmas chat to the Gardaí, certainly to the Gardaí, maybe the PSNI, just to hammer that home. Because I don't know, when you listen to us talk about things like that, if it sounds like, oh, would you ever stop talking about this? But, you know, unfortunately, every turnaround, a life is being lost on our roads. And wouldn't it be completely remiss of us if we didn't use the platform to try and get that message? Caroline, how long is left on the lines now, just to be sure, just so we know? So we're keeping them running as long as we can. Okay, so David James, Sean Quinn are going to be in studio with me a little later on. The Trombola is going to be in with us a little later on, because all of your numbers, if you've entered our massive Christmas cash and car draw, all of your names associated with a number effectively are in the draw drum. There is still an opportunity for you to get your name in there. And this is one of the last shouts for you right now. I'll just run through what's up for grabs. And the reason I'm doing this so much today is just because it's your last chance to get in all the draws, right? And listen, there's still a great opportunity, but this is a real window of opportunity. If you've got €15 cash to spare, that's great. Use it, have a bit of fun with it. You could be a winner. And if you have 50, you get 5 tickets. There are 10 each. And we have €1,000 to give away today. We'll give someone's going to be a thousandaire between now and 12 noon. And there's a grand a day between now. And when we give the car away, which is a Renault, a beautiful Renault Symbios worth over €35,000. So to be in every draw, get in touch with us right now. Get on the website, highlandradio.com, perfectly safe and secure. Or if you want to give us a call on 07491 25,000, 07491 25,000. If you're giving us a call, just be conscious that sometimes your bank will look for you to approve a transaction. So just have that in your mind so you're ready to go. And hopefully we'll get everyone sorted. I'm sure we will. that big draw with David and Sean and myself coming up between now and 12 o'clock. Someone's going to win a grand. Just to remind you one more time as well, you don't have to answer your phone. So if you are maybe on your way into a meeting and you're thinking, well, if they call me, I won't know and then I won't win. No, you win if your number comes out of the hat, so to speak. Read the blister packs. Home help only allowed to assist patients with medication from blister packs. I'm going to have to get some clarity in relation to that to see if that's a diktat or just one person's experience, but definitely going to have to check into that. Most people know what each tablet is for, of course, but we're not always interested in what's most people. It's sometimes the more vulnerable that we're looking to try and look after. Re-religion in school. I hope we keep our religion in our schools and people don't like it. Leave our country. Well, some of the biggest advocates of getting rid of religion from school aren't people that have come here. They're people working in the schools or the parents of other children, by the way, just in case someone has you convinced that there's people coming in from outside of Ireland trying to get religion out of the school. All the calls I'm hearing are from people within the country, if you know what I mean. The teachers' unions, who aren't, they're not refugees, right? The teachers' unions are the biggest advocates of this to some extent. I'll just double check that, but I believe that to be the case. Other groups of children, families that are non-denominational, you know, it's not who I think you're implying it is. But anyway, I hope we keep our religion in our schools and people that don't like it leave our country, as if we were in theirs, we'd abide by their laws. I think it's a disgrace and hopefully it won't come to pass. And it's time our political parties help keep our country as Irish for the Irish people. I'm sick of others telling us what to do in our wee island. Again, just check who's actually calling for it. You might be surprised.